हे वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय वर्जयेत् प्रमदागतम् अग्रस्तो बृहद्व्रतः इन्द्राणि प्रमाथिनि हरन्त्यपि जतिर्मना. It must give up. Pramada Gatam, talking with women. Agrahasta, a person who has not accepted the Grihasta Ashram, a brahmachari or sannyasi. Brihadvrata, invariably observing the vow of celibacy. Indrani, the senses. Pramatini, almost always unconquerable. Haranti, take away. Api, even. Yati, of the sannyasi. Mana, the mind. Here is the translation of this important verse, where in which Narada Muni, speaking to Maharaj Yudhisthira, is describing elements of the Brahmachari Ashram. So please, we shall try. But it's hard to read with a microphone in front of your eyes. Yes. So please listen, and then we shall speak about this verse, and we shall speak about the context in which this verse is spoken. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram, family life, must rigidly, very strictly, avoid talking with women or about women. For the senses are so powerful that they may agitate even the mind of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. Please repeat. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram, family life, must rigidly. What does rigidly mean in English? Raise your hand, otherwise. Yes. Very, very strictly. Rigidly means not bending at all. Very, very strictly. Must rigidly avoid talking with women or about women. For the senses are so powerful that they may agitate even the mind of a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. Now here is Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is not long, so please focus and listen carefully. Brahmacharya essentially means the vow not to marry, but to observe strict celibacy, brihadvrata. A brahmachari or sannyasi should avoid talking with women or reading literature concerning talks between man and woman. The injunction restricting association with women is the basic principle of spiritual life. Very strong statement by Srila Prabhupada. I'll read it again. The injunction, what does injunction mean? Raise your hand. Now you're afraid. Yes. the rule, or even a little stronger, the law. The law restricting association with women, Srila Prabhupada says, is the basic principle of spiritual life. Associating or talking with women is never advised in any of the Vedic literatures. Obviously, Srila Prabhupada is speaking of the intermingling of men and women here. The entire Vedic system teaches one to avoid sex life so that one may gradually progress from brahmacharya to grihastha, from grihastha to vanaprastha, and from vanaprastha to sannyas, and thus give up material enjoyment, which is the original cause of bondage to this material world. Did you hear that? Raise your hand if you can tell me essentially what that last sentence was. But don't worry, I'll read it again. This time you can listen very carefully, but I'll ask the same question. The entire Vedic system teaches one to avoid sex life so that one may gradually progress from brahmacharya to grihastha, from grihastha to vanaprastha, and vanaprastha to sannyas, and thus give up material enjoyment. Which is the original cause of bondage to the material world, to this material world. The word brihadvrata, who thinks they could repeat the essence of that sentence? That Prabhupada, everyone, yes. Yes, Paul. The sense of enjoyment is the original cause of bondage to the material world. Okay, that's enough for right now, but thank you. The word brihadvrata refers to one who has decided not to marry, or in other words, not to indulge in sex life throughout his entire life. Om Aginatimiranda Sajjana Jana Salakaya Saksu Samilatanjana Tasmai Sri Guru Venama Sri Chaitanya Manabhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapanatikam Vansa kaupa jubhyascha kripa sindhu bhayavicha patitanam pabhyanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. I would like to ask all the devotees, especially the sannyasis and senior devotees, and to pray that some of Prabhupada's mercy from that he's spoken in this part of his purports, Bhaktivedanta purports, that I can say something that represents Srila Prabhupada in these very, very, one could say, difficult verses to describe in contemporary society at these times. What I would like to start with is a perspective on these last five chapters of Canto 7. In the beginning of Canto 7, in the first chapter, there are some very, very essential points or questions being asked. Maharaj Prickett asks Sukadev Goswami about the Lord's neutrality, how he is equal to everyone, because it always seems that he takes the side of the demigods, the devatas, against the demons. So to take the side of one group or another group, Maharaj Prickett thought of as childish, practically speaking. So he asks, how is it possible that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be acting in this way that favors only the devatas? And the rest of the canto, not the rest of the canto, but up to canto chapter 10, is an answer to this question. And in regard to the answer to this question, several points come up. In the first chapter, the most important point that comes up is the power of absorption of the mind in thoughts of Krishna. And even if the mind is absorbed unfavorably in thoughts of Krishna, meaning pratikulena, it is so powerful just thinking about Krishna, placing the form, the name, the pastimes of Krishna in one's consciousness is really the essence of the Krishna consciousness movement. All the preaching, the chanting, the speaking, the service is really meant for this one thing, to place Krishna in our consciousness, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And unfortunately, I could speak for myself. I learned to avoid this. I learned how to almost like trick Krishna by externally doing service, but internally my mind is going here and there and it is missing the essence of the process, which is absorption and thoughts of Krishna. So therefore, even in this verse, the word pramatini, which means unconquerable or very bewildering, this is one of the offenses against the holy name. Pramada means the continuous distraction of the mind, the aversion. Krishna bhule se jivana bahimukh, the aversion of the mind to Krishna, even, amazingly enough, when performing devotional service. The mind tends to be distracted and averse to developing one's relationship with Krishna. Because this is the nature of being a conditioned soul. This is the nature of having turned our back on Krishna. This is the nature of having a false ego, a hankara, a mudatma, that I tend to want to place myself in the center. A hankara, a mudatma. What's the rest of the verse? Kart aham. I am the one doing it. I'm the central person. And the whole process of Krishna consciousness, of sadhana bhakti, explains Srila Jiva Goswami, is the process of turning towards Krishna instead of having our back facing Krishna, turning towards Krishna. So to show the kindness of Krishna to everyone, both devotees and asuras, as was described in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, Sukadeva Goswami tells about Sri Prahlad and his demonic father, Hiranyakashipu. And this goes on from the beginning or the end of the first chapter of the tenth canto, of the seventh canto, to the tenth chapter. So it's a very long pastime. But the purpose, on one level, is to show the Lord's equality and how he was kind to even Hiranyakashipu, who was so demonic, and he gave him mercy. So, of course, we just finished all that. But really, even more than the Lord's mercy to Hiranyakashipu, what is described is the glories of Sri Prahlad. He's the first example in the Bhagavatam, and as he himself says to Lord Srinagadev, you've sent me here to give the example of how a pure devotee should act in this world. The accepting of everything is Krishna's mercy. The fixedness, the focus, the absorption and thoughts of Krishna, regardless of the external circumstances, whether he was in the Gurukula, whether he was in whether being thrown amongst the Rakshasas, whether his own father had pulled out a sword and was threatening to kill him. He was simply absorbed in thoughts of Krishna due to his love for Krishna. He had developed his relationship with Krishna to that degree. So after hearing about this incredible consciousness that Prahlad Maharaj had in the previous chapter, in the 11th chapter, because that pastime more or less ended in the 10th chapter. So in the 11th chapter, Yudhisthira Maharaj, who was listening very carefully to this, he asked a question: how is it possible to develop this type of consciousness, this fixed, this focused absorption in Krishna? What is the means of developing it? Of course, the entirety of the Bhagavatam is devoted to, or at least mostly devoted to this Abhidhaya Tattva, how to develop our relationship with Krishna, how to bring us to the full absorption in thoughts of Krishna, how to develop our love, prema, parama arto, instead of looking towards material things as if they will satisfy us, how to only look towards Krishna and have that focus. And certainly that's the intention of the Srila Prabhupada's International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So when Maharaj Yudhisthira asked this question, how can one develop this consciousness that Prahlad had, Narada Muni answers this question in these final five chapters of the seventh canto. And his answer is the Vanashrama system. The Vanashrama system is the system to organize society in such a way that the development of love for Krishna is supported. Because in today's society, as every one of us knows, it's going in exactly the opposite direction. Rather than supporting Krishna consciousness, it supports a mentality that's demonic. Ishwaraham, Ahambogi. Every person is thought to see themselves as central. And it's obviously not true. If I said, who sees themselves as the center of the universe, who would be so foolish to raise the hand and say, but really that's the truth. This is what it means to have a false ego. This is the actual meaning of having a false ego, a false sense of being central to the universe. So in the 10th, 11th chapter, there's discussion on different points of Vanashrama, which again is the system that supports the development of the kind of Krishna consciousness that Prahlad Maharaj has. And then in the 11th chapter, the actual discussion of the different ashramas begins. And that's what in the 12th chapter, the discussion of the ashramas. And this goes on in the 13th, 14th, and the 12th, 13th, and 14th chapters. In this chapter, what will be discussed is the Brahmacharya ashram, and then also the Vanaprastha ashram. And in the 13th chapter, then the renounced order of life is discussed. And then in the 14th chapter, 12, 13, 14th, then householder life is discussed. Now each of these, there are specific, in each of these different chapters and the different verses, there are very specific practices that are recommended for those in whatever ashram you're in. There are specific practices. And some of them are, one could say, they're, you could say, very, very difficult to actually apply in this day and age, or you could practically say it's impossible to apply them in this day and age. Like vanaprastas are recommended to never brush their teeth, to let their nails. This is the kind of recommendations for a particular purpose, though. But these are the recommendations that, and live in a cave. Sometimes that sounds very attractive, I have to admit it, but it actually describes living in a cave for a particular purpose. Does anyone know the purpose?
To stay away from the wife and to...
No. No. It's to keep the sacrificial fire burning, and you have to live outside and expose yourself to the elements. So there are principles behind this. But that was an interesting guess, I have to admit. But there's specific purpose. There's the application of the principle, and there's the actual the principle. And the principle is the vanaprastha has gone through his household, the life, and he's organized everything so his life is very comfortable. But there's a problem. No one can be comfortable in the material world because everyone is going to die. So to detach oneself from the comfort, to take up that process of detachment from the comforts of that one has managed to surround oneself with in household life, then the vanaprastha life is recommended, where one has to learn how to tolerate. How to tolerate the cold, how to tolerate the heat, how to tolerate your teeth falling out. Such detachment from the material body is the purpose, and its enjoyments is the purpose of the vanaprastha ashram. But what is the problem when one performs austerity? Is it, what happens when you decide that from now on I'm not going to care if there's a tiger near me? Or what happens if you say that I don't care if it's hot or it's cold? Now, what gives you trouble? Your body is going to give you some trouble, but the trouble that the body gives is nothing compared to what the trouble the mind is going to give you. And therefore, in the beginning of life, and this is what this section of the Bhagavatam, this 12th chapter, is describing, is how to get a firm foundation in your life in studentship, so that one thing basically occurs, and that one thing is that you control your mind. A second thing occurs. Two is you take that mind and focus it on Shastra. So you learn to see the world, to see existence from the point of view not of the false ego, but from the point of view of Krishna, from Shastra, from the point of view of truth. So this whole section that describes brahmachari life, which is also applicable to all ashrams, practically speaking, is to learn how to control the mind. Because if one can somehow or another learn how to control one's mind in the beginning of one's life, and take the mind, which is like a beams light, you can focus it on anything you want. And if one learns how to focus one's mind on Krishna and become absorbed in thoughts of Krishna instead of thoughts of false ego, which means I am central and I am the enjoyer, that one is the most fortunate person in this world. And we can see how society, contemporary society, and Prabhupada would say so-called civilization, trains the young boys and the young girls in exactly the opposite way. To think themselves as central and to let their minds be wild. Instantaneous gratification of the mind, sense pleasure, subtle, gross, mobile phones. It is what everyone calls it, the weapon of mass distraction, where you always have it with you, and if you walk out of your house without your mobile phone, how dangerous a position one thinks one is in. And if you see people, it's so interesting, and I see it amongst speaking to my friends too. If you're talking to someone, and if there is a 1 minute or a 2 minute pause in the conversation, and you turn or you go to the bathroom while you're talking to someone, you come back and the person's on his mobile phone doing something, because one, practically speaking, can't live without it. Instead of not being able to live without Krishna, we can't live without this kind of distraction. That means the mind has become out of control. So this chapter, this 12th chapter, begins speaking about the process by which the student controls his mind, learns to control his mind. It doesn't happen automatically. By being a brahmachari, it doesn't happen automatically. By being a student, it doesn't happen automatically. But a specific process is given by Narada Muni and explained by Srila Prabhupada, by which the mind is controlled, and it begins with surrender. Vashan danto grohitam. That controlling the senses, vashan danto, controlling the senses, and acting only for the hitam of guru, for the pleasure, for the welfare of guru. So such qualified gurus have to be there, teachers, gurus, and such qualified students have to be there who are coming into the Gurukul establishment for this purpose, and the society has to be supportive that this is the purpose of education. So this is not something easy to just pick up and transplant. But yet, it has the most noble of all purposes for education. Vashan danto gurohitam. And here I'll briefly explain the system. Is that it's natural when a young child enters the gurukul and the teacher is very, very kindly, and he's very wise and very pure-hearted, and so much affection and knowledge flows from his heart into the heart of the student. And the student is little, and the guru who is under his shelter is learned and again and wise and kind-hearted. It's natural for him to want to please him. And this is what's stressed. You do this now, and then you do this, and then you do this, and now it's time to study. And at the beginning, the students maybe not don't feel like it, but that is where the learning how to control the mind comes in. They do it because of they're under the care of this exalted personality, who only wishes their welfare, and again, they're little, and he is wise, and so learned, and so kindly. So the first principle, as Srila Prabhupada many times said in education, is obedience. That means one has to learn to control one's mind. And as much as it's the opposite, it's completely the opposite of what the students learn today, practically speaking, to do what you're told, whether you like it, whether you don't like it, to do what you're told. And again, the student is young and submissive, and the teacher is wise and kindly and learned and pure. You can't eat until I say it's time for you to eat. But the wise and kindly teacher doesn't forget the student and let him starve. But yet, he has to control his senses. And yet, he has to control his mind. Yet, he has to learn obedience to an authority outside of his own mind. And this is the issue. Because everyone with a false ego has as their authority their own mind. I'm doing it. Why? Because I want to do it. And why do you want to do it? Because my rascal mind is telling me this is what I should do. So therefore, the first stage in learning to control one's mind is not listen to it, as Rishabhdev Maharaj says in the fifth canto, neglect. The mind is raging. Now I want to do this. Now I want to do this. Now do this. Now do that. No. Neglect. Just because my mind is demanding something doesn't mean that I have to follow it. Neglect. The mind will demand so many things, but not based on shastra and intelligence, just based on the senses. So first is obedience. And then gradually, as the student's intelligence becomes trained by the teacher, by shastra, gradually his obedience gets transferred to his own trained up intelligence. And then he is a mature student. And he can control his mind based on shastra, based on what the teacher has taught him. So he doesn't only remain obedient to someone who's not, as Prabhupada used to say, that vani is more important than vapu, meaning that the instructions are more important than the personal association, because those instructions you carry with you all the time. And if you lead your life in submissiveness to the instructions of a kindly guru like this, then your life will be perfect and you'll go straight in the right direction instead of the way that my mind tends to push me this way and then this way and then this way and this way. And today I feel like doing this and tomorrow I feel like doing this and up and down, and I'm in a bad mood and I'm in a good mood. No. So the authority for the individual's life is gradually transferred from the person, the guru, to the same person, to the person's trained up intelligence, trained up by the wise, learned, and kindly affectionate spiritual master. So as a part of that system, the brahmachari goes out begging. Now, what's the tendency when begging means collecting something? So what's the tendency when you collect something? But no, you have to raise your hand. What's the tendency? You raised your hand or you're just scratching your ear? What's the tendency when you collect something? You are very exalted. What's the tendency, Mataji? To get attached. At least something I should take for myself. At least, I've seen this. There's such a tendency when something passes through your hands for at least something to stick. There's a lot of devotees laughing because it's so true. At least something. But the training is nothing. And how much do you have to learn to control your mind to be able to do that? Then how often in our life we actually do something simply for the pleasure of another. Simply for the pleasure of another. And I don't want even a small percentage for myself. Just I'm doing it for your pleasure. This was actually an incredible aspect of the early days of the Hare Krishna movement, that the devotees did the most incredible things to please Srila Prabhupada. We had our kindly spiritual master, and we were also very young. He was the only adult in the movement at that time, practically speaking. And the whole mood of the society was supportive of this mood. But things were actually done for the pleasure of this individual, with nothing sticking, I mean, ideally. So the brahmachari would go up begging, and just see how difficult it was. He would get some food, because the society around him was supportive. So everyone would give something, and the brahmacharis would go and bring this all to their guru. And then they wouldn't eat, and they've begged the food themselves. They wouldn't eat until he said, now you can eat. So how much the mind has to be in control to be able to resist all the different emotions that will pass through. What happens if he doesn't call me? I'm so hungry. What happens if he eats everything himself? Why does he do this every day? Can't we sometimes have pizza? The mind will say so many things. And one, to survive and flourish, one has to learn how to neglect that very mind that is making all those demands. And gradually the mind, of course, calms down. Now, Krishna went out begging also. Srila Jiva Goswami describes something very, very touching that I'll just mention. Is that all the boys in the ashram of Sandipani Muni would go out begging. How many of you have been to Sandipani Muni's ashram in Ujjain? I was recently there, and also the place where Sudama, very, very sweet place where they collected their firewood called Swanagiri. And it's so interesting because this Swanagiri, which is tens and tens of kilometers from Sandipani Muni's ashram, I always wondered why Krishna went there so far away just to collect some wood. But then I saw, and I have to admit, this is my speculation, so no one's allowed to ever repeat this, but that place is Swanagiri. Have you been there? You've been there? It looks like Vrindavan. It looks just like Vrindavan. So naturally. So Krishna would go out begging and they collect firewood just for Guru. And everyone would, the system was they would, because they're young boys, they would go to the different, people didn't have to lock their doors. Like in Hong Kong, if you ring the bell, they say, Pinko, who is it? And then you see this little thing open and an eye stares to make sure that you're not a criminal going to break down their house. But those days the doors were open, practically speaking, and people's mood was giving, not fearful. So Krishna went out begging, and the boys would say, Oh Ma, please give us some food for our guru, for our ashram. But Srila Jiva Goswami says that Krishna could not say that. He could not say, oh Ma, because when he said Ma, he would think of Yashoda Maya. And then finished. So he couldn't say it. Srila Jiva Goswami describes this. Very, very touching, very, very personal. So now just to end, what about this particular verse that we're hearing, explaining how one should, other than the grihasthas, one shouldn't deal intimately with ladies? Is this something against ladies particularly? Certainly not. And describe a few verses later, I won't talk about it, but it describes, it's just the very nature of the material world. It is the nature of false ego that instead of having a spirit of service, which the purpose of life is to develop, a spirit of service, loving service to Krishna, instantaneously, by interacting with the opposite sex, in 1 second, you could be so determined in 1 second, and then in another second, the mind can just go boom and flip. And suddenly its spirit changes from a serving, loving spirit to Krishna to a mood of I am the enjoyer, Ishwaraham Mahambhogi. So to protect the brahmacharis, to protect the vanaprasthas, who are trying to learn how to control their minds, to protect the vanaprasthas who are trying to be detached from the enjoying spirit, and to protect the jatis, the renunciants, so that they remain deeply focused on the true goal of life. So these injunctions are there for that reason. So just read the verse again, and then we shall end. Maybe another couple of minutes for questions. A brahmachari, or one who has not accepted the grihastha ashram family life, must rigidly avoid talking with women or about women, so that the mind becomes controlled at an early age, so he becomes fortunate, so he can use his life in a wonderful, the most wonderful way. For the senses are so powerful, they may agitate even the mind of a yati, a sannyasi, a member of the renounced order of life. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions? And you have the microphone, okay? We won't argue with that. Yes, Prabhu. But speak slowly, please, so everyone can clearly understand. It's okay. I only have one. You have more than one.
The injunction is strictly in association with women. It demands the principle of spiritual life.
Yes.
So the question is, in our society, we have so many sannyasis. They have disciples.
Yes. Yes.
So they have to deal with it. So how is that possible? You know, they have to associate.
Yes. So I see that you're not, because people ask different questions at different times, and sometimes they have something very specific in their mind. And you know, sometimes these kind of questions can get political, as if criticizing a particular sannyasi. And I have learned over the years how to avoid that. Because the Bhagavatam class, but I don't think you are in that mood at all. But sometimes, certain people sometimes get into those kind of moods. So we're talking about the principle here. And one of the main principles is that sannyasis should take care of sannyasis, and I should mostly take care of me. Because if I start thinking that I should be correcting everyone else, then everything becomes chaotic and everyone else. And also, who am I to correct everyone? So the most important person for me to correct is myself. So I didn't answer your question, really. But my answer to your question is, sannyasis, of course, should be careful in a simple way. And sannyasis should be careful, and vanaprasthas should be careful, and brahmacharis should be careful. And one time, Prabhupada was talking about sannyasis. This was in Fiji. I was walking with him. And he said, sannyasis should minimize their eating and sleeping. And I was in a particular mood. And I said, what about householders? And he said, oh, householders, they can eat and sleep all day long. So sannyasis should be careful, and grihasthas should be careful, because grihasthas should be careful. And we should understand the very nature of this material world, and the best way to be careful is to really, really have a tatraloyam apimula mekalam. If we have a deep desire to actually develop our relationship with Krishna and serve Guru and Krishna, that is the best care. And if we make, yeah, that is the best care. So that's our responsibility. I don't know if I answered your question properly, but I tried. Yes.
What you say, in principle, I can understand it very well. The principle of renunciation and dependency on Krishna as a brahmachari, anaprastha, sannyasi. But what we really need is the context of a society.
I'm sorry.
Of caring.
A little louder.
Of caring.
Yes.
I have indeed joined this movement. We didn't have to worry about anything.
We didn't have to.
Worry about anything. We just distributed these books and we gave every single penny to the movement. And everything was taken care of. The salad was on the table, there was a place to sleep, there was a bed where you don't have a piece of cloth, a blanket to crash out at night. It was very easy because we were surrounded, we were in an environment.
And we were young?
And we were young. We get older, we find in our society we were not cared for.
People.
Women are not cared for, children are not cared for, brahmacharis are not cared for. And that's needless to the same extent as it was in our time and power, it was there. We want to speak of grihasthas or vanaprasthas, I'm talking about, and sannyasis. We don't live in a very caring environment nowadays. And so, how do you depend on Krishna when you worry how do you feed yourself?
Okay, I have a particular way of dealing with this question that probably won't be. It doesn't solve the problems of the world. It doesn't solve the problems of ISKCON, and ISKCON is so big. It's so many different things in so many different places, but it does address a way to deal with this particular issue. Or issues in general, is that I've found that if something really disturbs me, a particular point really disturbs me, that's Krishna like telling me that I should act on it. So if it really disturbs me that no one's being taken care of, then at least in my immediate circle, I should take care of people. So if it really disturbs me that no one is studying Shastra, I can't change the world. This is what I've really seen, that I can't change the world. It's so hard to even change myself. But that's where the main issue is, the changing of oneself, because that's where, if anywhere I have influence, it's there. So if I see people not being taken care of and it really disturbs me, then I should really go out of my way to take care of others. That's how, I mean, there's probably tens and tens and tens of ways of answering this particular question. But that would be my answer to it. Excuse me if I didn't do well. Yes. Prabhu. He has a very strong voice. We won't be able to hold him back, I think. Where are you from? Delhi? Hare Bol. Yes. Work like a donkey for 50 years and let your boss squeeze every bit of energy out of you. Yes.
So we really think about saving some money, although we're not able to save when we live in cities like Delhi, we're not able to save a lot of money. But some money we want to save for future so that we can have a better retired life.
Yes.
Is it not required?
No, I think that reflects on actually what Preetu Prabhu was really saying, that we always have to, there's the ideal, which we're speaking about here, and the ideal has to be balanced with the practical. And how to do that, how to apply the principles of the ideal to time, place, and circumstances, is wisdom. That's vijnana. That's actually what wisdom is. So, if you're talking about what should others do, that's one thing. If you're talking about what you should do, then do you have people who you trust who can advise you on the correct balance of these things? Do you have someone who really, not your wife, but I mean, not that she's not trustworthy, but she'll always say the opposite of what you say. Everyone knows. So, I'm sorry for teasing, but let me just change the subject a little bit to tapasya in this day and age. So we shouldn't all live in caves and not brush our teeth and let our nails grow like that and etc. and eat only dry leaves. But we should preach, and we should preach, and that's what's really emphasized. We should preach and participate in the Sankirtan movement in spreading Krishna consciousness. So that brings a different kind of tapasya, but with the same result. That some days you're with a person and you have to be so tolerant. And you may feel like doing this, you may not feel like doing this, but you have to control your mind if you have the dedication to the preaching, etc. So I think the form of tapasyas can change, but the basic principle of becoming fixed in pleasing another, and regardless of what your mind is saying, staying fixed in that is common. So we should understand the principles, and then with wisdom, dealing with people wiser than us, think of how to apply things. And also we should read the Bhagavatam very, very carefully and chant good rounds, because that, if you read the Bhagavatam, if you read Prabhupada's purports, he'll criticize that mood. And he'll criticize the mood of just collecting, thinking that one day I'll have enough. No, a householder should give continuously from the very beginning. What may not, maybe a little bit, but he should. What's described as the principles that are described for householder life, I mentioned something about brahmachari life and vanaprastha life, but the principles that is described for householder life is just breaking down the selfishness of just caring for myself and my family, just breaking down the selfishness and giving and giving, being in a mood of giving. This was the Vedic culture. So how to practically do that, maybe according to time, place, and circumstances, but the principle is there. And even describes, it will describe how one should put one, wife should serve the guests more importantly than to serve the husband, which is an affront to the husband's false ego. But the mood has to be established that this isn't just my wife, my family, and that's all that's important. But rather, I should be giving, 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 and break this point of selfishness. So how, to what point do we have to practically take care of ourselves? In other words, if we're going to depend on Krishna, we pick up our chapati, we still have to do something. We have to open our mouth so the food can come in. You know, so this takes some careful wisdom. But if we do things in a proper way, in a sincere way, then we gain. And the others we associate with also gain. Okay, one last question. Yes, Prabhu. To give to others, to break down that point of tendency towards selfishness, and I don't have enough, I never will have enough. This is the dharma of a householder as described in the 14th chapter. Shastra. We should
implement, you know, other kinds of like math, biology, and things like that, also within the group.
Well, there's at this point there are so many different theories about how to educate the children of the devotees, and ultimately it's going to be the parents' responsibility to make those decisions. Prabhupada, when he really didn't want the children of his disciples to have to enter the world. But the society never really developed to the degree that it could carry all those students with their different desires. So that was one concept. So I mentioned that there are that the teacher has to be very qualified, the student has to be qualified, and there has to be a supportive society. So when any of those three or all those three aren't there, then adjustments do have to be made. Now, Prabhupada never said that math shouldn't be taught. Prabhupada never said that mathematics, for example, shouldn't be taught. He was always practical. But he didn't want these young boys and girls have to get jobs and have to have that bosses who you have to please and be in the anxiety of getting fired all the time, and you get your MBA, and like that's what India produces is MBAs that can't find jobs, and Prabhupada saw this too. So he wanted people to become more self-sufficient too. But I'm not exactly answering your question. Your question was, should we have practical education? So there's so many, like ISKCON at this point, there's so many different kinds of schools that if that the the parents can choose one that they think is suitable for their own children, and that's going to make them more peaceful too. It's not like there is one thing only at this particular point. Just give me a moment. There's one other thing I would like to say is that what I've seen is that because the Gurukula system of ISKCON doesn't have the greatest of histories, and therefore there were so many adjustments were made, good adjustments, practical adjustments, this adjustment and that adjustment, but it's the children often don't know very much about Krishna nowadays. So you gain on one side and you lose on the other side. You gain on the practical material side, and a lot of them are good at finding jobs and things like that. But their soul isn't with Krishna Balaram. So, you dropped your cookies. Oh, really? I'm not sure I'm answering your question properly, but it's such a big world out there now for how children become educated. Such a big world that you can't say that. But it seems like the kind of education that you had it should go on, and in some senses it may not be so practical in some senses, but it may be practical in other ways.
Prabhupada wanted
he wanted a Vanashrama college also past the age of 12. The children would, their occupation would be more dictated by their natures. And he saw that with the devotees too, that as they got older, they really needed a different kind of, many of them needed a different kind of life than just living in a temple. And he wanted the rural communities for that purpose. So these are very complicated topics that have to do with ISKCON's history and what we should do in the future. But if you feel very strongly about this, then maybe Krishna is inspiring you to do something that gives another element or another balance. Hare Krishna. Okay. We're so fortunate to be in Vrindavan in the presence of Srila Prabhupada, in the presence of the Sisi Gonatai, Krishna Balaram, and Radha Shamasunda Lalita Vishaka. We are so fortunate. And thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.